You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
No matter what I end up doing, I'm appreciative of my opportunities because I was born in a place that's like void of them for the most part. So yeah, that's kind of how I look at it.
Welcome to Midnight Chats, a podcast of laid-back conversations with leading names in music. In keeping with these informal interviews, each new one is published weekly at midnight. This week's episode is hosted by me, Greg Cochran, from Loud and Quiet magazine. We're lucky to get time in with tonight's guest because, fair to say, Vince Staples' diary is looking slammed. After a low-key couple of years, 2021 is a big one for the artist. Starting with the music, just last week, the beginning of July, Vince released his fourth album, the self-titled Vince Staples album. Go check it out. It's the follow-up to Summertime 06, Big Fish Theory, and most recently, FM. 10 new songs made the final cut, but as he says in the conversation you are about to hear, he went through a prolific spell of creating material in 2020 during the pandemic and wrote almost 200 new songs, made about 30 of those with his friend and producer Kenny Beats that ended up forming this new project. It was the week leading up to the release of that new album that Vince was speaking to me from home in Southern California, and we talked a lot about his non-music endeavours as well. I'm sure loads of you have seen the brilliantly surreal and hilarious The Vince Staples Show on YouTube, and in a huge move, he's currently making some more episodes of that for Netflix. He's also getting into podcasting. There's a film project coming, and before the end of the year, he is also releasing his first graphic novel. So no wonder he's not sure when he's going to be playing any live shows anytime soon. From a UK perspective, two things I wanted to ask Vince about. He worked with the producer Sophie on his Big Fish Theory album in 2017. Sophie sadly died after a sudden accident in Athens, Greece earlier this year. And obviously a huge loss to music, a real visionary, and Vince speaks in really moving way about Sophie's influence and friendship. Plus, we talked a little bit about him joining Gorillaz on their world tour a couple of years ago, after he got to know Damon Albarn and collaborated on their track Ascension. So, here we go. A pleasure to welcome Vince Staples onto Midnight Chats, episode 112. Throughout this series, when we've been talking to different artists, lots of conversations about how people just managed the pandemic, you know, what the last like 14 months has been like, you know, in terms of like communication and how you've had to change working and stuff. But I think a few different people have said, you know, that change of speaking to people online and working from home, particularly at the very start of the pandemic, is actually they've enjoyed some of the things that have come out of it. Was it like that for you? Has it sort of made some of the part of your sort of job easier, so to speak?
I appreciate the time to kind of be home more. Like, I feel like we have a lot of unnecessary interactions. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot. We can get a lot done in the same manners and space, I guess. It's like, you know, people like to go sit at the restaurant, they go sit at the Soul House. It's like a thing. So that's not necessarily my thing. So, you know, I like, you know, not having, I don't live in LA, so I would have to like travel pretty far to go do these things. And it's like you drive 2 hours for a 15-minute meeting type thing. So yeah, it was like it's that kind of thing. But I know I appreciate anyone's willingness to want to have to speak up to me about what I'm doing. So, you know, it's not like I don't like to do it or I don't want to do it, but I do like doing it from home.
I hear what you're saying, because it's nice to have a couple more hours back in your day when you're not just stuck in traffic or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels a bit.
That's all. Yeah.
It feels a bit more productive. Yeah. So am I right in thinking it was your birthday a couple of days ago?
Yeah. On the second.
Happy birthday, man!
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
Did you have a good day? What did you get up to?
Nothing. Just, you know, I've been doing a lot of work, so I just stayed home for the day and didn't do no things like this for a day.
So obviously it's early where you are when we're recording this now, but what's your kind of like your average day at the moment looking like? You know, do you have like a routine? Are you kind of like get up straight into work? What's your kind of current kind of situation?
Yeah, like? Wake up, promo, press and interviews. And if I have time for other things, which usually we kind of don't, I'll probably like go to the gym or something like that. But that, yeah, promo, press and interviews. And like I did a tiny desk the other day. No, yeah, pretty much just promo for this upcoming project stuff. That's pretty much where the days are right now.
It's been interesting talking to people throughout this series about where they're at. Like people, you know, artists based all around the world, and things are obviously at different stages of being opening up with everything going on with the pandemic. What does it feel like where you are? Is it things returning to the sense of normal, or, you know, still things a little bit different? How's it with you?
It's returning to a sense of normal. I feel like, you know, I personally still believe, you know, I should and we all should be careful and be unmindful, you know, the people around us, and maybe, you know, their compromised positions as far as, you know, their immunity and things of that nature, and just be, you know, just mindful and be kind of just be polite to other people and not, you know, just take the proper precautions that we're all supposed to be taking, just not necessarily for ourselves but for other people. But yeah, things are kind of getting back to normal. I don't know if people necessarily are care much anymore like they did beforehand. I think people are kind of, we live in a desensitized culture pretty much, so I think we're kind of getting to that point with this.
What about things like live shows? Are you going to start booking tours and festivals? Is that kind of thing happening? Because we're in the UK, it's still sort of a bit of a, we're like 1 foot in the pandemic, 1 foot out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. Not as of now, there's nothing that's been booked. Yeah, there's nothing that's been booked, but I don't really see it happening for me anytime soon. But maybe, you honestly never know. But I don't think that's kind of our next step. I think we try to, you know, get a lot of these other things we have going are done, and then we'll go from there.
Is 2021 about working on kind of non-live projects for you? Is that going to be the priority?
I don't know. We have this music stuff. We have this stuff we're trying to do within like a podcast space. Not necessarily a traditional podcast, but something kind of within the format, within the podcast space. Working on, you know, the Vince Staples show with Netflix. Trying to get this film called Deadass that we're working on. Jermaine Fowler, trying to get that film out. You know, just little stuff. Little stuff here and there that I'm trying to, like, turn into big stuff. That's all.
Yeah, that's very humble of you. It sounds like big stuff to me.
Oh, it's not big stuff until it happens, so.
Yeah, true. I wanted to start by asking you about the graphic novel, because you just announced that you're going to be releasing a graphic novel called Limbo Beach in December. That's one of the things that you're kind of going to be involved with this year. What's the background with that? And have you always had a passion for graphic novels in the past, or is it an opportunity that's come your way that you thought that sounds really interesting?
So it's this company called D2 Comics that works with Universal. They do graphic novels based off an artist's music, and obviously I'm in the Universal system, so when I was brought the opportunity, I just asked them if we can do something unique to, you know, its own, nothing that was kind of derivative of music or project specifically, and, you know, they were up for it, and, you know, they kind of held our hands in the creation of it. We just had to come up with a story, and they found us the appropriate team to help finish writing it. They found the appropriate illustrator. It was a really good, just a good experience. Good team of people.
What I've seen so far from the kind of selected visuals that you shared looks amazing. What can you tell me a little bit about the story?
Yeah, just, you know, it's about a place where these kids go. They kind of don't know where they are. It's kind of their journeys in discovery and their, like, their maturity in adolescence in, like, kind of uncompromised situation of, you know, you wake up in a place, you don't know who you are, you don't know where you are, and that leads kids to being kids because you already know how children are. Children are very, you know, I wouldn't say judgmental, but, you know, it's very surface. So that kind of childlike behavior, that kind of childlike mind state in a place where they're by themselves, but they have these unique abilities and these unique strengths, it's just about their development, their personal development, and how they deal with that responsibility, how they deal with that power, how they deal with all these things while still essentially being children without knowing who they are, even. Because, you know, as a child, no one really knows who they are. You're just a child.
Have you held a finished copy of the graphic novel in your hands yet? Have you got it back from the printers?
Oh, no, but I've seen, you know, kind of where we're heading with it, and I think it's really, 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 really good.
Do you think at some point it could kind of be, I mean, the visuals-wise and story-wise, do you think there's some development in there? Could it, you know, in the past, obviously, we've seen it, tons of, like, graphic novels have been turned into, like, TV shows or movies or whatever. Like, is your mind in, are you thinking that kind of thing?
I definitely think it's a possibility. Especially with the team that we have and the people that are working on it, I'm pretty sure that anything is possible with these guys. They're very passionate about what they do and very knowledgeable about what they do. So if anybody can do it, it'll be these guys.
It's going to be the next Sin City.
Oh, that'll be very interesting if that's how it turns out.
You already mentioned there's a whole bunch of, like, different sort of projects in happening this year. One of the things you just mentioned there was podcasts. Like, what, given that we're chatting now on a podcast, what kind of thing are you looking to do there? Because there's a lot of podcasts out there doing similar things, right? So how important is it to try and do something that's a little bit different?
I think it's a space more than it is a thing. So if you can just utilize the space in a creative way and just utilize the space, like the digestion, it's a way people digest things. So if you can kind of put anything there, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to necessarily be, because I would say that a podcast is very similar to what you would see on a social media feed, like, based on the way that people use it. Like, same way that people would, you know, would utilize a blog or something like that. I kind of see a lot of people using podcasts in that light. So, you know, it's very possible to use them in a different light, because, like I said, it's just just a conversation piece. And yeah, you can make a conversation about literally whatever you want it to be about. So we're just trying to figure out a cool way to do that, utilizing the space and doing something that, you know, no one else is doing, both visually and, you know, as an audio thing.
On the subject of visuals, it always feels like every Vince Staples video that's ever released is an event. It's never ever thoughtless. It's always you know, it's always so imaginative and so many great ideas. Am I right in thinking that growing up you always loved movies and TV almost as much, if not more, than music?
Yeah, I didn't like music growing up like that. I still don't really honestly listen to music, but I do like, you know, television, movies, and things like that. We all do. So it's like just trying to make sure that I'm able to create unique things that I would, you know, lends itself to my art or whatever I end up doing. I don't want to lean on just, oh, I think this song's good. I don't want to lean on just, oh, this visual's good. I want to make sure that they kind of meet in the middle somewhere. So that's kind of how I look at a visual in general.
Can I ask about, like, what you sort of surround yourself with when you've got ideas? So, like, if you've got a new idea for a video or something like that, do you have like a home office at home where you stick, like, do you like sketch out ideas? How do you surround yourself with ideas? Do you like note them down on your laptop, or like what do you do to sort of capture when something comes to mind and you're like, I need to develop that, I need to work more with that, I think that's a great idea. Where do you put it? How do you surround yourself with that?
Nothing, honestly. I need to do a better job at that, but I don't do anything. it's pretty much like, you know, if it's worth doing, I remember. If it's not, I'll forget it, to be honest. But I'm trying to do a better job of remembering these things.
There's probably been like hundreds of great ideas that you've had that then you've like got distracted by something else and you're like, damn, that one's gone.
Yeah, that's definitely probably happened a million times. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. So we'll see.
On the subject of like TV and movies, what's the movie that you reckon you've watched the most over your life?
My life? So that would mean before I was picking my movies. Probably like Friday or something like that. Friday, something along the lines of that kind of thing. My family is very, very, we digest, and when I was growing up, like, we digested very black things, very things that were very relevant to, you know, our culture and upbringing, our surroundings. So Friday definitely has to be it. Yeah, that's definitely it.
Can you sort of recite every line?
No, I can't. I can barely recite my own lyrics. to be honest. I forget things. I forget things very, very, very fast. But I do love that movie very much. It's, you know, for it to be an independent film, for it to be something that, you know, was a brainchild of someone who was kind of has a similar, you know, trajectory as me as far as like starting his music and whatnot. I think it's a very important thing. It's a very important film. Probably more important than like it gets credit for.
100%. Something you just mentioned there was like, you know, keeping things in your head, you know, like when it comes to lyrics or whether it comes to lines, if you're like working on a script or something, as somebody who kind of like not necessarily, you know, quite sort of forgetful. So like when it comes to like, if you're about to play a show or if you're about to like record a scene for TV or for like an episode of the Vince Staples Show or something, are you good at retaining that information in your head or does it take a lot of hard work so that it sticks?
You know, it's just focusing on it then and there. Like for the Vince Staples Show, none of that was scripted. There were no lines. Like it was all
okay,
improvisational. I didn't write anything down except for like Ray J's parts or whatever. Everything else is pretty much just off the cuff. But yeah, if you say it enough times, you'll be fine. It's the way I look at it. You know, if I say it 30, 40 times in a row, then I'll remember it.
Continuing on the subject of movies, is there any like genres or anything that you just never, that just aren't for you, that you can't get on board with, or you just never really kind of fully given the time to?
I've always been somebody who's interested in like the way that things are made more than the things themselves, so, or why people like things. So it's not anything that I can't like do or anything I can't watch or listen to or anything like that. I think I can kind of just, I can ingest any of those things. It's just I'm not looking to be like excited by it. I'm not looking to like, you know, fall in love with it. It's just, you know, interesting to see if there's a movie and it's been made, obviously somebody liked it and obviously it's a crowd for it. So if I can kind of realize how and why these things kind of came to fruition, then it could help me create things as well.
I mean, in terms of the stuff that you're working on for Netflix, is that like an extension of what you've done with the Vince Staples Show? How do those things relate?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Literally, that's how we got the show. So, you know, Kenya Burris and his production company kind of saw, we had some meetings and they kind of, we had some meetings with a lot of people, actually, and a lot of people were interested, but it kind of made the most sense with Netflix. So we're just trying to do something that's very, very, that leans itself to that platform. And I think that's going to be a great thing for us.
You mentioned there that a lot of the stuff that you've done on YouTube, for example, was kind of done, created in the moment, you know, like spontaneous, like unscripted. How would this be different? Does this involve more planning? You know, once you kind of work with a big kind of content provider like Netflix or something, I guess maybe things are a little bit different at that point. So what has the experience been like so far?
Well, it's just, I just personally didn't do it. Like, but I knew what was going to happen, what was going to be said. We just had a general idea, but essentially it was just me and Calmatic. And we were able to work with some great people who have, you know, like the extras in the, not the extra, but the additional actors in the first one, like those are the guys from the film. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a film called The Wood that was a really big film out here. Like, they were the additional characters, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. Even past that, like, we just had some, you know, some local legends, I would say, from California, just to kind of help us with it. And I think that kind of made it to where we had that leniency. But yeah, we're definitely writing the shot and stuff. Obviously, that was just like an anecdote based on like remembering the lines. It was really nothing to remember. I just had to kind of know the scenario, and based on we were running gunning it as if it was a music video. So I had a little bit more leniency with that, but we did that in like it was a very quick like put together thing. So now with how we're doing it now, I'm pretty sure that it's gonna be even better.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. Are there any shows out there that have been, you know, shared in the last few years that you sort of see as a bit of a blueprint that you think, you know what, that was great, I'm going for that kind of sort of thing, or do you feel this is something completely unique?
Not at all. I guess I was talking from the rap world, so you don't want to be like, you don't want to bite anybody's idea. But there are a lot of great things that I've seen that, you know, I like How to Be a God in Central Florida. I think that's what the show's called. Excuse me if I've kind of said anything kind of wrong. I'm not that good with names. Of course, Pen 15 is great. Atlanta's great. So many great things. Black Monday is great. It's a lot of really, really good shows out there. Obviously, you have your Lovecraft Country, you have your Watchmen, you have these kind of blockbuster-esque shows. But yeah, it's a lot of really good stuff out there.
What did you make of that show, Dave? That's kind of like only really been big in the UK the last like year or so.
I honestly haven't seen it, but a lot of my friends are Travis is working on it, so I'll watch it one day, definitely. But I know they're in their second season right now, and I know for sure they're going to get a third because they're doing great. So yeah, that is something that I do plan on watching.
And what about like the different disciplines? Like working on a TV series is obviously a totally different discipline to sitting down and writing lyrics for a record. So how are those things different for you? Do you have a preference for one over the other? And how do you switch modes? You know, how do you one day sit doing one thing and the other, like using a different part of your brain?
It's very similar to me because at the end of the day, they're words. You know what I mean? Like a television show is words, a song is words. And either way, you're basically just trying to have a conversation with the viewer and the listener without necessarily acknowledging them. As mean as that sounds, I mean it in the purest way possible. But so it's just trying to have a good conversation with, you know, whoever's listening. And it's, you know, it's the same thing as a podcast. I mean, essentially, it's the same part of my brain specifically.
Do you have the viewer in mind? Do are you thinking of it in terms of a conversation when you're writing that stuff? Like, do you sort of have this like imaginary viewer or listener in mind when you're doing that?
I mean, that you kind of have to, you know, because it's like you have to make sure that everything makes sense as far as like the trajectory of what you're creating, right? So things have to have a beginning, middle, and end, essentially, right? But some things can go unsaid based on the audience itself, you know what I mean? So you don't need every little detail. If that's based off, it's somewhat being conversational. There are some things that are implied, and that's based off you knowing the listener or knowing the listener's position.
With regards to music, obviously, you worked on a lot of music in 2020. Like I read that it was something like 100 tracks or something that you'd kind of worked on. From all of that, how did you decide what would appear on this self-titled album?
It was like almost 200, to be honest, like 180, 190, something like that. I forgot. But
wow.
With the project,
I mean, that's prolific. That's super prolific.
I mean, no, they all weren't good. You know, they all weren't good. They all weren't great. They all weren't finished. But I think it was the first time I had like enough time and just took the time to really just create aimlessly. You know, pretty much I've never had any like spare songs. Pretty much every song I've ever made has been put out. So it's funny, like the Kenny stuff was kind of a separate excursion. Like I did the Kenny stuff. The Vince Staples project, yeah, stuff with Kenny. We did 30 songs in like 8 sessions towards the end of the year, right before Christmas. So it kind of wasn't along the same vein of, you know, what the other stuff was, but that other stuff was very vital, like where I am now creatively. I was able to like learn a lot from creating that much, if that makes sense. Like not being as precious with ideas, knowing that certain things can service it more than one way. Or certain songs end up being referenced in like one line or, you know, half a bar. I just, you know, took 3 songs and turned them into 2 lines. Like it's happened a few times.
And what's your relationship with that material that you've made? Like you said, the kind of couple of 100 songs. Like some of that, is it going to make it onto future releases? Some of it, do you just sort of, is it
probably not
on a hard drive somewhere?
Yeah, probably not.
No, fair enough.
I honestly don't know, but like I would know. Like the thing about music is like if you don't put it out if you don't love it when you make it, you might not love it later. Yeah, I mean, it's a learning curve. It's just really a learning curve.
The album is self-titled. So how does it feel to? And you've talked about how there's more about yourself in the lyrics on this record. So how does it feel to kind of give more of yourself away or share more of yourself than on previous releases with the lyrics?
I mean, I don't think that's the case, to be honest. I think I've literally said the same thing in every song I've ever made because, you know, at the end of the day, you're just making music about your life if you choose to do that. Mm. You know, when you're making music about your life, it's only so much you can say. It's only so much life to live. I think a lot of it is putting the right things in the right spaces. It's one of those things like, you know, it's not what you say, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So it's like people be saying, oh, why haven't you spoke about this? Why haven't you spoke about this? And it'll be things that I've said literally 10, 15 times, but it might have not have been on the beat that was suitable for that kind of understanding. It might not have been, you know, it might not have been palatable. I would say palatable. So just making sure that, you know, when it's a big fish, there's so much things going on musically and there's so many, you know, different ways that you can, you know, approach things. It's not going to seem as if let's put the lyrical content first. You know, that's not what people are thinking about when they're thinking about that project. So as I got to this position I am now creatively, I kind of started realizing that and, you know, just went from there.
And I really like the interludes on this album. You've got your mother on there, for example. What was the conversation like when you said to her, I want to make a recording of you to go onto the album?
Oh, she don't know I recorded that. If she knew I recorded that, she wouldn't have said it.
Okay.
Yeah, so she for sure doesn't. She doesn't even know. She just still doesn't know that that's on the project. I said, here, sign this. And she said, okay. And that's how I got on the project.
Right. So do you know if your mum listens to your records, she'll hear it once it's out?
Oh, yeah, she'll hear it one day.
Are you looking forward to that conversation with her?
No, she's not going to care.
Is she pretty chill? Like,
yeah.
How does she feel about, like, your kind of, you know, your day-to-day, your achievements, everything? Is she just still your mum?
My mom doesn't care. As long as, like, I'm okay and I'm happy, you know. Just make sure I eat every day type stuff. But I have a really, 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 really good mother. So I'm very appreciative of her. So, you know, my mom doesn't care about that kind of stuff. She's happy that I'm happy with whatever I'm doing. If I said I don't want to do this anymore, she wouldn't spend one second trying to talk me out of it.
What do you appreciate about that? Just the grounding, just the sort of the feel of always having, like, almost unconditional support, you know, just always being there, regardless of what, the high days and the low days, basically.
Yeah, just, you know, like I said, I have a great mother. You know, she's, without my mother and my, you know, family in general, I wouldn't kind of be where I am, so. And she's literally the main reason.
You mentioned Kenny Beats earlier and your kind of work together on this and the sessions that you had. How was that experience of working with him? He's worked on a whole wide variety of projects. How was that for you?
Yeah, it's easy working with Kenny. Kenny's my friend. Like, I talk to Kenny every day, no matter. Like, probably, no, not every day. I don't talk to anybody every day, but I talk to Kenny a lot. So working with Kenny's easy. It's almost easy. Like, it's hard to explain. We did 8 sessions. You know, we did 30 songs in 8 sessions, and I was there for, like, probably 2 hours per session, you know? It wasn't like we were sitting in the studio trying to figure anything out. So I would come over there like 7-8 o'clock at night. He'd have 2 or 3 beats. I'd listen to him, pick one or pick two, record them, and I'd go home. And then we had a project. So it was very easy.
The last time I saw you in the UK was part of the Gorillaz Festival in Margate a few years ago now. It was like 2017, something like that.
Yeah.
You obviously collaborated with Gorillaz quite a bit. How did you reflect on that experience? What did you take away from that?
You know, it's a great experience growing up, you know, when Feel Good was out and things of that nature. Of course, you know, Dame has done way more than that, but that's, you know, that was my reference point. It was just interesting to be able to, you know, go there and be a part of that and be on that stage. I understand that these are once in a lifetime opportunities. Like, these are not regular things. People don't get to just do these things. And, you know, spend some time with De La, you know, Sims, who's extremely, extremely talented, like a good friend of mine, like literally a once in a lifetime type person, talent, all that stuff. Yeah, it was just fun to be able to see these things, to go to Brighton and all these other places I'd never been before. I had fun. I really enjoyed it. And and I like doing a show where I don't have to really do anything. I just got to do one verse. So it's like, you know, you get all the good stuff of touring without having to practice really, or, you know, things of that nature. Just one verse a night and I get to travel. I like it a lot. It's my favorite thing about music is being able to see places.
4 minutes every night and then you're done, you're out.
Exactly.
During your trips to Europe then, what places and people have sort of connected with you? Is there any particular places you've been to where you thought, you know what, I really like this. I could even, like, imagine myself staying a bit longer or living or just sort of soaking it up?
Europe specifically, I really like London. I don't know why either. Like, I just like the way places look. My agent, Doug, had his wedding in the countryside. So that was interesting over there. I liked it. I'm just appreciative. Like, it's not like I look at places and I like them or I don't. I don't live in LA. I live in, like, the suburbs right now, like, basically the middle of nowhere. I don't like to go out and, like, I'm not like a see person. Like, I don't want to be seen type thing. So I like traveling and just seeing how people are living. Like, when I used to travel, obviously when the schedule was a little bit more lenient because I wasn't as successful. Well, not successful, I just wasn't as big of an artist. You're successful if you're traveling, but I wasn't as big of an artist and I didn't have as hectic of a schedule when I would travel. We would just, like, walk around and, like, just look at stuff and, like, look at people and, you know, walk around and get lost. We were walking for hours in, like, in Ireland. We were walking for hours in, you know, Australia and shit like that. So I really, really, really enjoy just being able to travel and see things and see how people live. And because I like to look at the similarities more than the differences, because those similarities give you, like, a sort of comfort that kind of helps you while you're creating. And that's definitely like, that's what I like about it the most.
I wanted to get a word from you about another British artist that you worked with previously, Sophie, who obviously tragically passed at the beginning of this year, and you worked together on Big Fish Theory, and I wondered if you had any reflections on Sophie's talents and the impact that working with them left on you.
The thing about Sophie was a very, very unique person. My favorite thing about Sophie is how when Sophie walked in the room, she wasn't like afraid to like be Sophie. Like the funny thing about Sophie, people don't realize Sophie's like 6'5". Like Sophie's a large human. So just to be 6'5" and walk in a studio that's not even in the studio, but to be in Australia when it's 90 degrees outside in a black leather bubble coat, I was like, who is this crazy person? That was it. Like Sophie was just funny. Like Sophie always had, never go to sleep, up all night, call you to go to the studio at 4 o'clock in the morning, but be awake early. Like me and Sophie became friends because, you know, I would be up early and I would go. The rooms are smaller in Australia. Like, of course, we're sticking and moving, so it doesn't really matter. But I would be like upstairs on like the balcony, and like the lobby, super early, like doing stuff, better internet type stuff, and Sophie would be up there. And I think Sophie was kind of surprised. Never admitted, but I think she was surprised that we knew who she was. Or not that we knew, just that we were like, that we liked the things that were done. So, you know, just having conversations and, you know, talking on the sideline, you know, just being, you know, human. You know what I mean? We have to care about people. Like, I'm a nice person. You know, so I try to be, at least for the most part. So, and Soph is also a nice person. So that kind of was just our connection. And then we only made 2 songs and they both came out. So that was my friend more than the collaborator. You know, email me randomly and just check on me and, you know, shit like that. And I went to go see her last time. That time before last, she was in L.A. She was working on her last album. But yeah, just a really, really, really good person. Hari, good person. Introduced me to Hari in a festival somewhere. We were at a festival somewhere in, like, the South randomly. I forgot where it was. And this motherfucker just got lost and just popped back up in, like, 4 hours dancing. Same way she walked away, like, literal absolute crazy person. You know, had a lot of appreciation, a lot of respect, a lot of admiration for her, and, you know, the things that she did. And Soph did a lot without talking about it, if that makes sense. Covered a lot of ground and made a lot of, you know, strides towards things for herself and what she believed in and what she represented and who she identified as, without making it something that was, you know, it was okay, this is my talent, but also on the other hand, this is who I am. It was never a marketing tool. And as someone who tries to do the same thing, because I have all these experiences, but I don't want you to look at me and be like, oh, I'm happy for him, let me feel good for him because he made it out of the hood or things of that nature. I don't like those kinds of things. Like, don't use my circumstances as like a crutch for me. And Soph is somebody who literally did not use anything as a crutch. And, you know, it wasn't always a bright day for her. Sophie wasn't always a happy day for Sophie, but, you know, she walked around like her chin up at all times. Like, it was never any sort of poor me, what about me. It's like, when it was time to make the music, when it was time to perform the music is what mattered. And I think that's something that I definitely respect. And I've kind of learned a lot in the times that we had known each other. So, yeah, I appreciate Sophie a lot.
Thank you for those words, Vince. I think that's actually a spot on beautiful tribute to an artist who's a huge loss to the music scene, so appreciate that. And it's and hard to talk about it not just as a from Sophie's like artistic contribution, but also as a friend as well, so thank you for that. Final question, Vince, because I know you got to be other places and do other things. It's really just about how you think about the future and what you sort of see your vision for your creativity. Like, do you ever sit down and think, like, what will I be doing when I'm 40? Like, will I be working on TV shows or movies? Will I still be making music? Do you ever allow yourself to kind of think that far ahead, or are you much more a live in the moment kind of person?
Oh, yeah, we definitely have, like, you know, tentative plans as far as, like, goals and things of that nature. We try to plan things out in advance. But, you know, you kind of got to listen to life. You know, if life throws something away, that might change the whole plan up. You know what I mean? So just trying to, you know, just be open to listening to life. And also, you know, I don't know, just, you know, just trying to make sure that I have a plan, but I'm also, like, open to change. And I think that's what keeps you in this thing. You know, because I'm no matter what I end up doing, I'm appreciative of my opportunities because I was born in a place that's, like, void of them for the most part. So, yeah, that's kind of how I look at it.
To find previous episodes of Midnight Chats, simply search your podcast app. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to keep up, as they're published every week at midnight. For more information on the music magazine that makes this series, visit loudandquiet.com.
Anyway, good night.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.